Welcome, everyone. Hi, Christy. Hi, Sharon and David and Robin. And so tonight is online only because Peter's on his self-retreat. So that's why there's no in-person. And we are going to, hello, David. And we are going to be speaking about sloth and torpor, which is one of the five hindrances. And so far we have discussed ill will. The first week we discussed sense desire, then the second time ill will. And Leslie did restlessness and worry last time. Tonight is sloth and torpor. And then Peter, after his retreat, he's going to speak about his retreat. And then the week after, he's going to do skeptical doubt, which is the fifth hindrance. So sloth and torpor, I think even just the words speak a lot about what this is, sloth and torpor. It's a little intimidating. Now, generally speaking, when we are discussing the hindrances, we're first applying them to the meditative state itself. So, you know, we just sat for 45 minutes. I don't know if any of you in that 45-minute sit felt any kind of sense of sleepiness or drowsiness or withdrawal. Okay, Christy did. Leslie did. And, you know, it's interesting. It's one of those hindrances that, so for some people, meditation is mostly full of, you know, restlessness and agitation and mind wandering. And then other people, this sloth and torpor may come up often. Also, sloth and torpor tends to come up during retreats. So how many of you here have been on long retreats, like 7 days, 10 days? Okay. So for those of you who haven't, if you do ever go on a 7-day or a 10-day retreat, often you will experience sloth and torpor in the first couple of days because we're kind of withdrawing from the sensory world of our usual busy life, and we're often coming in a little exhausted from travel or whatever it is. So that might be a time when you notice it more. And then other of us experience it maybe on a daily basis. And so we're going to talk about we're going to sort of look at all these different cases. So to begin with, the Pali term is Theena Mida, and it's kind of a compound word. The etymology is basically like, so sloth, Theena, is a thickening, a kind of hardening, a rigid state. And torpor, the Mida, is more of like the sluggishness and heaviness of the body and the mind. So together, they really cover this spectrum of a sort of congealed, hardened mental state, a sluggishness of consciousness, and then also like a heavy physical, maybe drowsiness and loss of energy that manifests throughout the body. And some of the metaphors that are used in the suttas are like a heavy blanket smothering the mind. Really, really friendly phrases. Things like a prison cell, a cold, dark prison cell, or like congealed, hardened butter that you can't spread with a knife. It's just like solid. And, or like a drugged state, like a stupor almost, which I've experienced, just very uncomfortable. And it can also be like even a diluted sense of calm, like a spacey feeling that at first seems like it might be a nice state, and then you realize it's actually not the concentrated state that you need. And we're going to talk about that. That one's a tricky one. So since when it comes to the hindrance in meditation, we're more concerned about this mental sluggishness, the sluggishness of the consciousness, although we do need to also look at all the physical factors too. So we do look at the practical physicality of like, did you get sleep and did you have a big meal? So we're going to talk about that. But ultimately, the tricky part of this hindrance is the mental sluggishness and the consciousness that's a little bit more elusive as to why is it stuck. And it's trickier to get to the bottom of that. So what are the signs? So the first obvious physical signs are nodding off, you know, drowsiness. Like, has anyone ever been in meditation and just kind of started slumping? It's like embarrassing, right? If you're in a group. Yeah, so like when you get that slumping feeling, eyes closing, or like you are suddenly alert again and you don't even know if you were sleeping or not, and you're like embarrassed because I have no idea if I was there or not there. So those are the obvious signs. There are other feelings too, like it almost feels like it's too easy. You're on cruise control and you're just cruising along and you're like, oh, I must be doing a really great job as a meditator, but actually you might be in a form of sloth and torpor. And that would be one of the trickier ones. And we'll talk more about that. Other things, and these are things that you're going to notice as we discuss all this. You can also reflect upon these as your part of your daily life as well. So you can bring this into your, you know, what's happening in the morning, what's happening throughout your day. So even though it is about meditation, it can also be thought of energetically in other activities of your day. So one of the other things would be just a lack of motivation, a lack of vigor, a kind of you know, and like procrastination, or you just want to go to bed, or you just want to close your eyes, a kind of like draining of energy. The other thing is, again, like this diluted quality of a cozy feeling where you just kind of want to keep hitting the snooze. Like you're just like you're on the couch or something and you just can't quite stir yourself to do anything. And again, it's a tricky state because you're kind of like, oh, I feel so relaxed. But if you really look at what your goals are for the day, it might be, I see David just yawned. So that's another sign. So we'll have to try some of the anecdotes in the call. So yeah, that's another sign, like yawning. The other thing would be like a false feeling of comfort. So you can feel this like, this cozy feeling. And again, it's just this kind of autopilot feeling. So those are all things to watch out for. Okay, so what are the causes of this sloth and torpor? So one of the causes, which is something that with our mindfulness we can think about and apply to a lot of things, is what are you thinking about? So if you're thinking like, oh, I'm so bored, or oh, I'm so tired, there's no way, I only got this much sleep, there's no way that I'm gonna be able to sit 45 minutes without falling asleep. So you could be feeding it just by focusing on it, actually, like too much, you know. And so you want to, first of all, we're going to get into the remedies, but you want to start just by being aware. What are you telling yourself when you're in this state? You know, I mean, it could even be like more meta, you know, like for me, I'm in winter, you know, I experience Michigan winter, you know, and it could just be like focusing on, oh, I need something I don't have, you know, and then that kind of can make you feel a little bit, your energy contracts. So the other thing that we need to watch out for in terms of causes, so you could be thinking that you need self-care and you need to be kind to yourself. And sometimes that can be not what you actually need. And ever since I started preparing for this talk, I've been really focused on that because I work from home, which is a big temptation. Oh, I need a nap, you know, like I can take a quick nap before this next meeting or something. To really, really get to know ourselves and get to know, like, when is it the self-care we need? And when is it actually sort of a seductive pull into this lethargic state and training ourselves to invite more of that in? So that's another thing we want to watch out for. Now, here's an important part of this hindrance, the emotional avoidance. So this is actually one of the biggest reasons this is a hindrance that we have to pay attention to, because sometimes when we're overwhelmed emotionally, or dealing with trauma, or dealing with disappointment, or dealing with very difficult circumstances, one way that our nervous system responds and our brain responds is to shut down. And so we get into that freeze mode. And so we actually will find ourselves just kind of like going into a stupor and just wanting to sleep. And it's counterintuitive because you would think that that sort of psychological drama would be more like you want to act out, but it's actually one of the ways that our nervous system tries to compensate. So you've probably heard of, you know, fight or flight. And then freeze and sort of shutting down and numbness is another way that we can respond. So especially if you find yourself, you're doing a long sit or you're at a retreat, you might have a lot of stuff actually coming up, right? Like you might find yourself in a whole day of sitting at a retreat and there's just like stuff bubbling up from your subconscious or from that you've been holding back or you haven't been able to process. And that could actually like just really suck you into this small space in your mind. And that's something that we're going to talk a little bit more about in the remedies, because that is one of the more difficult things to handle, right? So we want to be really aware of it. Okay, so dietary factors. So certainly overeating or trying to meditate right after a big meal. You could go into a food coma and just be out. You might be dealing with sugar imbalances or hormone imbalances or too many carbohydrates. And these are things that each one of us can just pay attention to. And so if you're finding that sloth and torpor is coming up a lot for you in your meditation or throughout your day, you want to start maybe keeping like a simple journal of your habits and try to find patterns and try to track troubleshooting, let's call it, right? Because if it really is like the timing of the meal or what you're eating, that's a lot going to be a lot easier to deal with than like these deep emotional psychological things I was talking about. So another thing in terms of the concentration and the meditation itself, so going back to that sort of tricky, diluted state where you think that maybe you're in a good equanimous kind of place and actually you're in this kind of sloth and torpor, it is so when you're in a deep state of concentration and you don't have enough energy to balance that out, then you will actually kind of go into this very, like, it's called sinking mind. And so it feels, again, it feels like, oh, maybe I'm actually, maybe this is jhana, you know, maybe this is an enlightened state, you know, but it's actually just this like really subtle, like it feels pretty good, but something in you knows that you're still kind of under a bubble. You're still kind of under some sort of wrap is how I can explain it. And I've had this happen to me, and I've had like, I've been in long meditations and realized, oh yeah, that's a sinking mind. So that's another one that we want to really pay attention to. And I'm going to talk about more of that in the remedies. So, okay. So now, David, you mentioned that you haven't done a long retreat. What is your practice look like right now? Do you meditate a little bit each day or?
For myself, I'm a rank beginner. I've been attempting to learn meditation in one form or another for over a decade at this point. But much like my struggles with getting fit, I've been in a state of almost constant injury for that time. So because of that, I get setbacks really heavily. Now that I'm a little bit more learned, I've been trying to get, apologies. Nope. I've been trying to do more, but for me, the thing that beats me up the most is just the sheer physical demands of it. I'm still trying to rehab my spine to the point where I can sit properly. So I've, in terms of having real quality, before I get sidetracked somehow, either internally or externally, I haven't lasted longer than 15 minutes at this point. So I'm way down here in terms of my overall level.
Yeah. Well, actually I would say that honestly, any effort toward a consistent practice is amazing. And Leslie knows we've been teaching for a while now. I teach a group of executive women. I teach people who really even 5 minutes is a challenge for them. So I would say, I would say any consistent amount of time. And, you know, there are some science studies out now too, that really, if you can do 12 minutes a day of concentration practice, that will take you pretty far. Yeah. So I think that's wonderful. Okay, so I want to go into the remedies, and there's going to be a lot in there, and then we'll have plenty of time for open discussion. But before I do that, I just wanted to do a little survey again. So Leslie, I know you've experienced some sloth and torpor and sleepiness in your life and your meditation. Christy, in the showing up for you in your meditation?
Yeah, it was really a problem when I started meditating regularly. And then I would say more recently, it's gotten better. Mm-hmm. But just tonight, and it's probably I just didn't get enough sleep and I had a very busy day. But I started to like surf about halfway through. And I want to talk to you about that too after you're done. I did have a question about this. But yeah, that's my habit is to just get really comfortable in the meditation and then just drift off.
There you go. Yeah. So that's kind of like that more diluted peacefulness in a way, right?
Yeah. You think you're a great meditator. Oh, wow. I'm on another plane here.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, wait. Yeah.
Where was I for the last 20 minutes? I have a recollection.
It's amazing to notice it too. Yeah. We're going to definitely talk more about that. Robin, have you experienced any sloth and torpor so far in your practice?
Early on, yes, definitely. And at various times, but not tonight and not recently. If anything, it's more the active mind, you know, trying to quiet the active mind.
Got you. Okay. And Jim, how about you?
Well, I've been meditating since 2010 when I moved to Florida. And I currently meditate with Michael Caine on Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. He's also a former student of Tara Brach. And I think he used to work with Peter. I invited him to the talk tonight, but he had other things going on. Mm-hmm. I don't experience it much. I'm more like an overactive brain. I have a hard time slowing it down. So I don't have an issue with sloth and torpor.
Okay. Well, you can tuck this away in case it happens one day.
Sure. I'm sure it will. I'm getting to that age. Yeah. If I was president, I might be falling asleep at meetings.
Okay. Oh, and Sharon, I didn't mean to miss you. Sharon, is this something that you experience in your practice? If you're there, if not, it's okay. Okay. I will continue. All right. So it's good to hear kind of where everyone's at with this for the moment. So now we're going to talk about the remedies. So what I'm going to talk about, these are all in the suttas. These are, you know, coming from the Buddha's actual teachings. There's one sutta that I think it's I was going to excerpt the suttas, but I decided just to kind of keep it more simple language tonight. But there's one sutta where the Buddha talks to one of his major disciples who's nodding off and he gives them this set of instructions. So a lot of that comes from that sutta. And then there's a couple other suttas where some other tips come in. So he kind of does it in order of what to try first. So there's a sequential process here, but of course it can just be whichever one works for you. You don't really have to like go one by one through it, but I am going to go in the basic order that he suggested. So it starts out with mindfulness. So the very first step is just to be aware that you're experiencing sloth and torpor and see if you can identify a narrative that you're creating around it, maybe a habit that you're doing or some sort of self-talk. So start with that, right? And so I have an example for myself now that I've been like extra mindful about this. I get up at like 5 in the morning and then I have this whole morning routine. And sometimes, because I work from home, I don't have to get, you know, I don't have to commute anywhere or anything. So sometimes I have extra time before some morning meetings. And then I might tell myself, oh, maybe I should take a nap because I've been up for 3 hours and maybe I got up too early or I need more sleep. And so then if I do that, though, I end up being more groggy, like it doesn't work. And so I've noticed that. So even just bringing mindfulness to it and doing kind of trial and error and seeing like, again, like, is this really what I need? And what is the story I'm telling myself, right? So I got up at 5. I've got a long day ahead of me still, and I work from home. I can take a little nap. Well, it turns out that's not a good story for me. And so, you know, I can abandon that story. And then that kind of takes care of that particular incident of sloth and torpor. But also, if you're noticing thoughts like, you know, I just can't do this, I'm too tired, or this always happens, or anything like that. So that's step number one, is just bring mindfulness to it. If that doesn't work, then here's an interesting one. So this is called attending to perception of light. And I think this tip can actually work for a lot of different circumstances. Really like this one a lot. So basically, the Buddha actually said, imagine daylight and like illuminating the inside of your mind, like white daylight, bright daylight, and just brightening your mind no matter what time of day it is, no matter dark, light, inside, outside, just kind of have this like internal, sun lamp inside your brain and just bring this illumination and then feed that. And then that can start to counteract the sloth and torpor. And I have a little story about that. So this was my second winter in Michigan after being in Florida for like 8 years. And Michigan winters have, it's not just cold. It's like a thick gray sky that never stops. And I lived in New York City. And so winter there was no problem. We had sunshine. We had all kinds of things going on. But Michigan winter is just like gray, heavy, thick. And of course, using my mindfulness, I was like, I'm not going to let this get to me. And plus, some of you that know me a little bit know how important nature practices for me and being outside. So I was also like major withdrawal from my Florida walks in the morning, walks in the evening, walks in the afternoon. So here I am like trapped in this cold, freezing cold place and it's gray, gray, gray. But I started to notice things, right, with my mindfulness, because I was like, I'm not going to let myself get overtaken by this. And so I would just look out my window. I can see the sunrise, which is good. So the sunrise, when it can break through, but sometimes I would, of course, couldn't see it at all, but I could sort of tell there was like a little bit of something changing in the sky, like somewhere in the corner, like the sun is trying to peek through. So I would shift my attention to like, and amazingly, in -4 degree weather, I still would see some starlings or like these cold weather gulls. Don't ask me how these birds can survive and fly. So I would look at them and think, well, if they can do it, I can handle this gray sky, you know? But the most amazing thing I noticed was that then there would be a day, same exact heavy gray sky, no problem. I wasn't feeling any sense of heaviness. I was feeling like almost relaxed and almost comforted by the gray sky. And then I was like, oh, okay. So it's not dependent on the same gray sky, right? Like there are days when I feel fine. And then there are days when I feel like I can't take it. Like I need to light a bunch of candles or, you know, whatever. So I mention this because you realize it's the relationship you have with it, right? So I had to start cultivating this more, harmonious relationship with the weather and with the sky and see if I could have more of those days where it didn't affect me at all. But thinking of this perception of light and this illumination in your mind and sort of having this go-to bright light regardless of circumstances, I kind of like having that in my back pocket, right? So that is one of the things, the remedies that the Buddha said to bring to the sloth and torpor, the state of sloth and torpor. And I want to mention that this is primarily an energy issue. So once you solve the food and the hormones and the sugar and, you know, whatever it is that might be affecting you physiologically, then on the deeper level, this is an energy issue, like a balance of energy. And the emotional psychological states, then they kind of suck you in, right? And we'll talk about how to dispel that. But the very hopeful thing is that when you really get to know yourself and when you start working with this, that you can have an energetic shift. It can happen pretty fast. So it doesn't have to be this going back to the mindfulness of the story you're telling yourself. It doesn't have to be like, oh, this is never going to go away. I'm never going to get out of this, right? Like to have that, I don't know, hope is a strong word, but to have that understanding that actually you can shift this energy pretty quickly if you can get to some of the roots of it and find the things that work for you. So the third thing the Buddha advised was to recall the Dharma. So to maybe in our case, because back then they recited the Dharma and they had it memorized. So in our case, if you have a book nearby or you have a favorite Dharma talk that you could listen to or podcast, even just 15 minutes, just go to the Dharma and see if that can inspire you and arouse interest. Because one of the things that you want to do is bring interest and investigation and energy. You want to bring energy into your state. So then if that doesn't work, then try to actually recite the Dharma out loud. And so this, you know, knowing what we know now about the vagus nerves, how many people know what the vagus nerve is? So, right. So, you know, it's a lot about nervous system regulation and it can really switch our states pretty fast. So we know that speaking out loud and singing and chanting tones the vagus nerve and activates it in a positive way. So actually reciting the Dharma out loud was what the Buddha said to do 2,500 years ago and actually makes sense if you think about the vagus nerve. And so again, you could then just take the book and actually read out loud if you're in a situation where you can do that. Now, if you're in a meditation retreat or in a seated silent practice, then no. But if you're just by yourself or you need an energy jump in the day, that's something you can do. And I have another winter story about that, because not this past winter, but the one before, I was working in so my mom has a sewing studio in her basement, but the windows, there's hardly any light comes in. And I was down there working on something and it was cold and there's a little space heater and it was February and it was just bad. And my usual sunny disposition was completely gone. I was really unhappy, actually. And I just thought, I can't do this. Something needs to help, right? So I don't know how it happened, but I started reading Tanisro's translation of the Satipatthana Sutta. And something inspired me to read it out loud. And I actually recorded it and I read it out loud and I recorded it. And it was like 20 minutes. And for some reason, doing that just like woke me up. And I hadn't been told that that was a good idea. So when I saw this as a prescription for sloth and torpor, I was like, oh yeah, that actually worked for me. Number five is to be inspired by fellow practitioners. So how many of you find that when you meditate in the Sangha together, like even tonight earlier, that it's easier to do with a group of people? Like I definitely do. And it was amazing even just noticing it tonight. Like I was a little nervous because I had my talk to give, but I was like, totally like, this just feels easier with people, right? So so if you're, you know, we've got so many online sanghas now. You could even just listen to a guided meditation where, you know, you can get inspired by a group of people or another teacher and listening. Okay, so that's number five. Then number six, this is going to sound a little intense, but I think a lot of you have been listening to these talks or probably already thought about this. The Buddha said to contemplate death. Because if you contemplate death, basically, you contemplate the short time that you have here to study the Dharma and to practice the, of course, impermanence and inevitability of our death, and that could be enough to kind of wake you up and energize you. And if that doesn't work, you could also focus on metta practice. So metta practice can be very energizing. So do like a loving kindness meditation and maybe even listen to a guided loving kindness meditation. So that can sort of like warm your heart and, you know, bring up loving kindness memories, even just again, like sort of speaking along with the guided meditation and doing the may I be happy, may I be, you know, at peace. That is kind of can wake you up, right? As opposed to just kind of sitting there and just trying to stay, you know, in a silent meditation. So metta practice is another one that can energize you. Now, number seven is to adjust your breathing. And this can really work for a lot of people. So that could either be shorter inhales and shorter exhales, which kind of like energizes the body. Like some of you who study breath work, like Leslie, maybe you know from yoga, and you know, you can really like rev up your body with changing your breathing pattern. You can also put yourself in an altered state of mind. So be careful if that's not what you want. So practice changing like how, you know, the length of the inhale, the length of the exhale, how much you're holding the breath in between. And then the next part of that would be like, where are you breathing in your body? So are you breathing all the way down into your belly? Are you breathing up here? Are you focused up here? Like, so you can change the focal point of where you're paying attention to your breath. So sometimes going back to the cruise control that we talked about and the kind of like diluted equanimity, sometimes that happens when you're focusing on the nostrils and like a very concentrated breath practice, especially if you're, you know, doing jhana training or something like that, or like one pointed concentration. Sometimes that one pointed concentration, this is what has happened to me many times, is when I slip into that kind of cruise control state. And so changing the focus of your breath to like maybe breathing into the belly or a body sweep, like actually imagining your breath moving through your whole body, that can sort of wake you up and bring more energy into your body. The other thing you can do is just like change your meditation object. So you can suddenly pay attention to the sounds in the room, or so instead of just the breath, like the sounds of the room or like sensations in the body, and notice like how your feet feel on the floor or your, you know, your butt on the cushion or whatever. So try some of that. So that would be adjusting your breath, adjusting your meditation object. And then the seven factors of awakening. So this is where we can really get more nuanced with what we need to do. Mindfulness is the first factor, and mindfulness is there all the time, right? So mindfulness is kind of like, if we have our seven factors of awakening, mindfulness is like the fulcrum here. And then we have our energizing factors and our calming factors. And so we want to be balanced. We don't want to be tipped too much to the calm ones or too tipped to the energizing ones. So in sloth and torpor, we're kind of too much in the calming factors. So we need to energize. So our energizing factors are going to be investigation, persistent effort, energy, and then joy and rapture. So those are our energizing factors. So we've already kind of talked about some things that tap into that. So metta practice is an energizing factor, bringing in the joy. Investigation is like the mindfulness, getting curious, looking a little bit to, you know, the narrative that you're saying or what's happening with the body, and sort of moving energy around. Like that's sort of bringing that curiosity, that investigation, the persistent effort, the energy. So like staying focused, sort of re-inspiring yourself by, you know, maybe even if you're just in the seated practice, like maybe you can recall a mantra even. I have mantras that I've created for myself that are just spontaneous, but you might find that there's a certain, like in some practices, people repeat Buddha, 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 or like it could be something you make up, you know, that you use as a way to energize yourself. So think about the seven factors of awakening and do all the different things that you can associate with the energizing factors to balance that out. Okay, if none of that works, we need to move to more like radical physical stimulation. So we do get more serious here. Okay, so the Buddha said, one of the things he said is to tug on your earlobes. So yeah, if you want to try it right now and tell me, do you feel yourself waking up a little bit? Apparently it's like an acupressure point. So that's one thing you could do, tug on your earlobes. Another thing is a Qigong practice. It's actually a Qigong practice that I learned, but it matches one of the things that the Buddha said, which is to go like this. So you kind of like stimulate your arm and it kind of wakes you up. Yeah. And you can do this. This is great for work from home. For me, I do this all the time when I take breaks. If you have to carry tension in your shoulders. And how many of you know about something called tapping? Tapping is like a modality, right? So you could also do tapping, right? You could do like choose your tapping practice. For those of you who don't know tapping, it's, you can look it up. It's a great thing that works for a lot of people, but it's like, you know, it will definitely help stimulate you and wake you up. So that's another thing. Now, a third part of this is you can get up and go splash your face with cold water. So the Buddha said you can do that. That's one of the things you can do to wake yourself up. Another thing is if you're out, like if it's evening time and you have access to the outside, like Leslie, think of some of our retreats we've been on where you can just walk out and it's like the stars look amazing. So, you know, use the awe of nature, use the awe of the universe and re-inspire yourself. So looking at the stars. Okay, now some of my favorite things here. So walking meditation. So you can absolutely do walking meditation. You can do standing meditation. And if you're in a retreat setting, and it's usually it's accepted to do this as long as you're like, you know, mindful as you do it, you can actually move. Like, so let's say you're in a seated position. Like, let's say I am experiencing sloth and torpor and my seated position, and I can feel myself going like this, right? Which has happened in this very chair in online sanghas before. So let's say I'm doing this. Now, without disrupting my meditation, I can, you know, maybe you want to open your eyes a little bit, but I can slowly and continuously, calmly, you know, move to a standing position, right? While continuing the meditation without having to disrupt anything. My chair sort of made some noise, but if you're on the cushion, it could be quiet. Now, then you can do a standing meditation, but then if you're in the right circumstance, then you could even like move that into a walking meditation. So you can just seamlessly move through these types of sequences if you are experiencing sloth and torpor. And that could be like, you know, the entire 45 minutes you could be doing that. You could be moving between positions. So that's another thing you can do. Oh, walking backwards. I like this one. So the walking backwards, because now you have to really pay attention walking backwards. You have to really put your foot down, and that will help wake you up too, because it's like an unusual, it's an unusual goal to do it. Okay. The other thing with this is keep your eyes open. So you can open your eyes. And so usually they say, if you open your eyes to kind of keep like a downcast gaze, but in this case, you don't really want to look down. It's okay to open your eyes and find a focal point that where your chin is up. So it could be looking out the window, but then stay in that meditative focus. You know, you're not going to be sightseeing. I mean, you could just maybe pick a tree or something, you know, or something, or art on the wall in the distance. But if you lift your chin and place your gaze out there, then that will help you as well. Joseph Goldstein, and I listened to one of his talks on sloth and torpor, and he talked about making it like cartoon eyes, like pretend like you have toothpicks in your eyes and just like really like keep your eyes open. Okay. So if none of that works, if you have tried all of these things to your best of your ability, none of it works, then the Buddha said, you probably do need some rest. Yeah, then you're allowed to rest. But even then, you don't get off the hook that easily. You have to rest in the lion's pose, which is on your right side. And then you put your feet one on top of the other. Some of you may have seen art. I wish I had one to show you right now, but it's something commonly depicted in illustrations. So you're in your lion's pose. And then you let yourself deeply relax as much as you can without actually falling asleep. So even then you can't totally go off into dreamland. Like, but you do allow yourself this deep relaxation. And then just when you're about to really go to sleep, then the Buddha said, get up. Now, I heard Joseph Goldstein talk about this in one of his talks, and he tried it and he said that it worked really well for him. So I actually tried it this morning. So I want to report to you. that it did. It was a very interesting thing. And with all of this, I would say try, like with everything in our, what the Buddha tells us, try it for yourself and see what works for yourself. So this morning I did my thing I told you about. I did the 5 a.m. I did my meditation. I did my coffee. I did my early morning writing. I did all the things. And then I was like, okay, now I'm going to, I felt a little sleepy because it was like a few hours had passed. And so I did the resting thing, and I had this moment where I thought, I'm tired. Like, actually I could go to sleep, but I'm not going to let myself do it. And then I rested a little bit, just enough to feel like I could tell that I let go of, like, I relaxed. I deeply relaxed for sure. And then I got up, and then within 15 minutes, I was not sleepy at all. And that's what Joseph Goldstein was saying, is that like, you sometimes you don't know until you cycle through and see. Now, let's say you're like, okay, I did all this, and I even tried the lion's pose, and I was still tired. I still was like dead to the world, and I needed a nap. So then, yeah, actually, maybe you do really need a nap. So we're not going to be totally insane. We have to get to know ourselves so well. But what I love about all of these suggestions is that you can really push yourself in a healthy way to really understand your, you know, maybe there are some lingering things going on that are suppressing you, right? Like maybe you are holding some kind of unprocessed grief. Usually the culprits with sloth and torpor are, you know, grief, deep psychological things that we need to work with, which is normal, right? Like, it, again, nothing about this is like a failure. This is the normal human condition. This is the Buddhist psychology. This is the Buddha's brilliance of figuring out 2,600 years ago, like what happens if you've not processing your feelings, like, oh, you start sleeping in meditation. Who knew, you know? So a lot of times the really difficult sloth and torpor is coming from unrecognized emotions or states that are kind of stuck, or habitual patterns that we're not aware of, that this is going to help us become aware of. And also beliefs, right? So I had thoughts that, you know, okay, it's because of my age, or it's because of menopause, or it's because of this, or it's because of the weather, right? So then you want to bring investigation to each one of those beliefs, because I proved myself wrong many times. And many times my energy came back fully, and I realized that, no, it wasn't true, you know? So I had to keep like investigating and keep trying different things. So that's basically the main talk on a sloth and torpor. So now we have plenty of time to share experiences and questions, because depending on what your interest is, we could go deeper into certain of these things, and especially the meditative delusional part, which I've had some direct experience with. So thank you for listening. And thank you. And who would love to share first? Is there anybody who wants to ask a question or share? Okay, Leslie and then Christy.
I just want to thank you for that last part about you got down to the final point of you may really need a nap.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I started teaching meditation when I was a teacher at Rollins, and I'm teaching, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-old kids who are burning the candle at both ends and stressed about all kinds of things. And, you know, they would come to me saying, I just fall asleep every, you know, and I could see in the sessions they were falling asleep. And every time I would sit down and talk with them about, just try to probe into what their sleeping habits were, what their eating habits were, almost always it was because they truly were fatigued.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would, in many cases, I would just say, you know what? You need a nap. Forget meditation. Go take a nap. You'll feel better. You'll be able to study a little bit better in the later afternoon. So thank you for saying that. But I also see that as being very connected with the investigation part that you've brought up, which I think that's, for me, the bottom line with any of the hindrances. What is going on here within me that is causing this circumstance to arise in my consciousness? And so it really is a wonderful opportunity to examine. And for me, I know carbs will do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I eat too many carbs, you can be sure I'm going to be asleep at 2 o'clock if I have a nice, you know, 3 or 4 rolls with ones or whatever. You know, it's just, yeah, I can count on it. So I really like that opportunity. And I think that's what all the hindrances are about, giving us an opportunity to really self-reflect and self-examine what is really going on here. Trying to get, again, we're always trying to struggle or move away from any delusional state we may be in. So thank you. That was a great overview.
You're welcome. And, you know, it's interesting too, because the more you get into the nuances of all of this, you know, I was listening to, in Joseph's talk, he was talking about, you know, when you're in a retreat environment, you can really get into such detailed observation, right? So he would try sometimes not having dinner and see how that affected his meditation the next day. And he would notice that he had more sluggishness the next day when he had dinner versus when he just had the noon meal. So I thought that was interesting. And I know at the last retreat we had at Deer Haven a year ago, my first couple of days I was experiencing sloth and torpor. And then I stopped eating dinner, actually, because have you ever been to the Deer Haven retreat, Leslie? You never made it, did you? So there, it was like an abundance of food. Like they had so much available. And so then I was like, I can't do dinner because there was just, I was already full from lunch. And that helped me. And then the other thing was, you know, when you, like we said before, when you first arrive at a retreat, you're bringing all of the, you know, exhaustion from your previous weeks. But then the other thing that was mentioned in a few Dharma talks was you also are leaving all of that stimulation behind. So a lot of times we get like a false sense of being awake from like reading, scrolling on our phone and watching TV and all that. So, okay, Christy.
Yeah, so like I said, I used to, it was pretty common for me to go into that sort of dead zone in my meditations, and it was really a little bit frustrating. And then a switch just flipped, and it became more about restlessness. Oh, now I'm in the restlessness period of my meditations. And tonight I had the bonus plan of half of it was restlessness, and then the second half was love and torpor. So I got both tonight. But what I wanted to ask, and I'm actually asking you and any of the other people who are more experienced meditators than I am, I've been doing this for a few years. I've sat a couple of Peter's day-long retreats. I haven't done a long retreat, and I'm about to do that in May.
Oh,
but
good.
But I still feel like I don't really even, I don't want to say I don't feel like I'm doing it right. That's really not the way to look at it, I know, but when I'm meditating, if I'm just completely awake and I don't feel any kind of physical altered state at all, I feel like my meditation wasn't that successful. When I get to a state of relaxation where I can really sort of concentrate, that's, to me, that feels like, I don't want to say a better meditation, but it just feels like I'm more in it. Mm. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on that, since you've done it so much longer than I have. And also, what is there a balance? I know you said between energy and sluggishness, you know, you have to find that balance. And is it just, you just need to stay awake? Or is there a moment of sort of like, you know, a relaxation that you can really ease into, but stay focused?
Yeah. Well, so a couple questions I have. So you're meditating daily?
Yeah, I do just about every day. I miss a day here and there, but I mostly do every day in the morning, 45 minutes.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, that's good. That's a good amount of time. And so you feel like if you feel like you don't consider it a good sit, if you don't go into this kind of relaxed, altered feeling state of like.
Not completely altered, but at least just relaxed enough that, you know, my body feels very relaxed. My mind can either be energized or sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
But when I feel like my body's relaxed, then I feel like it's better.
Mm-hmm.
And am I just misinformed?
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting when you go on your retreat. So you've done day longs. Where is your retreat going to be?
I'm doing the Goenka retreat.
Oh, nice. Okay, great. Leslie did the
Goenka. Leslie doesn't think so.
I haven't done it yet. I will one day. One thing that I don't like about the thought of it is that they don't do walking meditation, right? It's like,
no.
So, and I love walking meditation. Anyway, no, but I think you're going to learn a lot. My understanding is that we don't judge the practice, right? That we show up and we do the practice, because every single time you sit, you're learning something and you're making, you know. And also, like what we were just saying, sometimes that is actually a false state when you think that you're in this relaxation state. Maybe you are, but like that's not necessarily helpful, right? Because you could be on cruise control in that state. So it's not a given that it's always that you're always in this that when you're feeling relaxed that you're always in this perfect samadhi or something, right? Now I think that you're gonna learn a lot when you go on this longer retreat, and also maybe when, you know, at some point if you have like some one-on-one sessions with either Peter or one of us, which, you know, you can have a conversation where we could really talk more about, you know, kind of throughout like what you're experiencing. But I've been taught not to focus too much on that, although I do have goals. I mean, I do have goals with my practice, but I have learned that sometimes when I think I'm like meditating well, that it's not true necessarily, that it could just be, you know. And sometimes, you know, when people have really extraordinary experiences, a lot of teachers, pretty much every teacher I've heard, say not to put too much weight on that, right? Like not to, because then you're chasing those highs and right. And that's not actually ultimately what the path is about. So right. I think so. And certainly I'll open this up for anyone else's comments. I still think what's most important from what I've understood is the practice itself and doing it consistently and doing it daily. And I think the retreats, for me, that was the game changer, doing the long retreats. Leslie, did you want to add something?
Well, I certainly recognize the situation that you're talking about, Christy. But one of the things that I've come to in the last few years, and I think this is in large part the emphasis, I do a lot of study and reading in the Zen tradition. And even though the insight meditation people talk about bare awareness, this concept of bare awareness is very deeply entrenched in the Zen tradition. And that has helped me in the last few years with my, all of the hindrances. And that is just be aware of it. In other words, we're practicing a way of being that accepts reality as it is. Sloth and torpor is here. Oh, there's sloth and torpor. Here, this is what sloth and torpor feels like. Instead of getting mad at myself, which I used to do, I would get mad and say, what's wrong? And, you know, do I need a B12 shot or what's, you know, what's happening? Just recognize it. And accept it and allow it. And most of the time, it will dissipate. Mm-hmm. But this is what we're, the practice, mm-hmm. This is why doing this in your meditation is so important, because we want that then to translate out into the rest of our lives.
True. Yeah.
That capacity to be concentrated and focused and present with whatever is right in front of us.
Yeah. So, no, I realize that that's the goal.
Yeah. That's the, if you want to put a goal on it, to me, that's the goal.
Goal is to take it off the cushion and bring it out into life.
And that's a good point too, that like similarly that you're not going to go out in the world and be chasing feeling good all the time, right? That like sometimes feeling good is actually just, you know, being there in the fully present in the moment, you know, and you get like gifts that way because you're not searching for something. But also it is true though, that, that there are certain, you know, that, that right concentration, that there are things that we're taught to do to increase concentration, and that samadhi and rapture, you know, that these are things. And so I would say that, but the thing that I'm always taught is like, don't chase anything and don't get attached to anything. And then that kind of goes to the Zen, the bare awareness. It's like, there have been times when I've had a lot of samadhi and it seemed to go forever. And then I inevitably reached a point where it wasn't happening like on command as I thought I it would be. And then I had to deal with that. I was like, oh, it's not just easy anymore. So anyway.
I have a comment, April. Have a comment. Aaron. Everything that you're sharing is it's interesting to me because I think Leslie touched on the fact that everything for me is a matter of equanimity, but I have, and last week I think when she talked about the restlessness and worry, when things are out of order, I'm just going to say just out of order, I experience all of the hindrances in particular, but I guess I didn't think about sloth and torpor, but I get exhausted. And I do have a lot of things that I'm trying to go through and get done. And I pull things out and then there's clutter and being in the midst of all of the chaos. It may or may not be sloth and torpor, but restlessness and worry is happening and my mind gets busy. And then I have to bring myself back to the moment. And I think what Leslie, what you just said was so true about being aware of your state at the time. And I do a lot of that during the day. A lot of where am I now? If anything is not comfortable, what's, I kind of bring myself into the moment and I just pause and be present. And I start thinking, I start feeling or sensing what's going on here. But I just want to be quiet for a few minutes and do that, and then sort of like readjusting a little bit, and it improves. So I'm not sure about age. I hate to blame everything on age, but I noticed that not having a routine, not having a schedule, I don't work. I've moved into a state of life where things, if I'm not aware and conscientious, then they could get pretty unbalanced. And I'm just gonna kind of go back to the equanimity part.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for sharing, Sharon. I heard multiple times different Dharma teachers refer to a multiple hindrance attack, so, which I loved because that is so true. Like today I was really paying attention in my morning sit. And I was like, yes, I cycled through sloth and torpor, agitation, you know, restlessness, my face got hot for some reason, all these things happened. And so it's true. You can have multiple hindrances attack you at once. okay. Does anyone else have
cereal? It could be cereal too.
Yes. does anyone else have any questions or reflections before we wrap it up? No. Okay. Well, David, did you?
Yes. I was glad that you mentioned the Moultrie hindrance attack because I have seen not just in meditation, but in you know, interactions in regular life that, all right, you feel agitated, which fries your nervous system. So then that leads to sloth and torpor, and you get this kind of feedback loop going. So I got to wonder if there's such a thing as a coordinated anti-hindrance, if that's a thing.
I think it does come back to what we've been saying, which is just being as mindful as we can be each little tick of the way, each hindrance that happens. And it's so true. I noticed that too, that if I get very activated or agitated, like let's say with a work issue or something, that I'll just kind of go into this like crash afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting to notice that. Yeah. Robin, did you want to share anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to thank you. That was wonderful. I really learned a lot, you know, particularly about the remedies, you know, and what you can do there. And I have had this sometimes when I've worked really hard and my mind is just overstimulated, you know, for maybe a week of a lot of work. And I have had that. And often I know when I'm sitting in my chair at work, because I'm not a big sleeper and I get tired, I know to put my head back for like 5 minutes and just to let myself rest. And I think learning that, you know, and then there are other times, particularly on a Sunday when meditating or not meditating, I find my eyes just wanting to close. And I don't know, that's particularly about a, you know, about that being tired or exhausted. I think probably that's about wanting to shut the world out for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But and so I start to do things like you suggested, walking meditations or, you know, various activities. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I don't know that I'm tired, but, you know, it just seems to be on a Sunday where my energy drops rapidly. So I think this will be helpful. I'll be able to, you know, use some of these remedies to find out, you know, where I'm at with that. Because I do particularly, now I can tell if I just really need a nap, a short nap.
Yeah.
But I think this will be great when I have one of those Sundays when I don't meet with my wonderful friends for breakfast.
Or I don't have...
And then you have a food coma and then don't even try to meditate.
No, well, you know, those days, because I have people around me and activities, right?
Yeah.
It's the days when I don't usually plan a lot around people that it kind of befalls me. So that's just given me a lot of, you know, a lot to think about. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being here. Well, thank you, everyone. This has been wonderful. And thanks for everybody sharing. It really adds a lot to our conversation when people get to share. So thank you.
Thank you, April.
Thank you.
Thanks, April. Thank you.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
And Leslie, I wasn't able to be in the Sangha last week when you gave your talk, but I listened to it.
Oh.
And I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you, Christy.
I got a lot out. Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I forgot we're supposed to have a moment of silence. Sorry. Okay, so I don't have my bell. I have to work on that one. Okay, so thank you everyone again. Have a wonderful week. And next week, Peter will be talking about his self-retreat. And then the week after that, he will be talking about the hindrance of skeptical doubt. And we have a day-long retreat, April 18th.
Yeah, thank you.
Awesome. Okay. Bye,
everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.